I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ain't gonna be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fog and dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run it down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program. You're on whatresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Anyway, fairly unusual article in the Globe and Mail today. It's entitled "Population Growth Isn't a Bogeyman," and it's written by Pierre Desrochers, who's an associate professor of geography at the University of Toronto in Mississauga. That's actually not far from where I used to live. And Joanna Shermack, and she's a doctoral student in science and technology at York University in Toronto, and they are the co-authors of The Population Bombed, Exploding the Link Between Overpopulation and Climate Change. And that's kind of interesting. They have some challenging ideas, which I'd like to share with you. This is from their article. Many activists and policymakers wish to regulate or tax away fossil fuels. Many activists and policymakers wish to regulate or tax away fossil fuels is ultimately based on the belief that environmental impact is correlated with both increasing population numbers and economic development. The interesting thing is the people that are all for the carbon tax are also for mass immigration. So if there is a correlation between expanding population and and stress on the environment, they're going in exactly the wrong direction. But that's not exactly what these authors are arguing. In other words, the more of us there are and the richer we are, the greater our environmental impact will be. It must be. That's the way the argument goes. Conversely, the fewer of us there are and the poorer and more energy starved we are, the better the environment will be. And that's what the radical carbon taxes and environmentalists really seem to be pushing for, although they usually won't say so they continue. Now that got back up again. That line of thinking, however, ignores the empirical data and causal observation that tells us that the exact opposite is true. The notion that billions of us might exist on this planet is actually entirely contingent on the widespread use of fossil fuels. And this is where their argument becomes really interesting. They have enabled humanity to grow by creating a civilization increasingly decoupled from resources found above the ground and increasingly better able to provide energy sources higher up on the energy ladder rather than, for instance, burning cow dung, as in much of parts of rural India, or burning the forests for wood. For starters, fossil fuels have actually played a positive and crucial public health and environmental role in the past two centuries, inspiring productive population growth. For instance, city workhorses, as well as their excrement and carcasses, were a source of deadly diseases such as typhoid fever, yellow fever, cholera, and diphtheria. Horse feeding requirements commanded more than a fifth of America's agricultural land. That's be a century ago. I mean, horses were, except for the railway, the major form of transportation. And to supply a large city like New York or London required a tremendous number of horses. Horses, of course, dropping excrement and perhaps even dying. And this introduced or exacerbated a number of diseases which we basically eliminate for our major cities, such as typhoid fever, yellow fever, cholera, and diphtheria. The replacement of horses by cars and trucks powered by petroleum products thus made much more agricultural land available for other uses, like human beings, and dramatically improved public health. Kerosene, heavy oil, and later natural gas have also displaced poor quality biomass fuels that filled houses with soot, particularly carbon monoxide and toxic chemicals. In the days of burning coal, so think about that. You know, up until actually the 60s, London was a very, very smoggy city. Whenever there was the emissions of coal, the coal smoke was pressed down by a fog bank. London could go through what were called smogs. So bad that many people actually died if they had a weak respiratory system. Increased fossil fuel use also made possible significant advances in sanitizing drink water and removing and treating sewage through the construction of water infrastructure and the powering of treatment plants. Rivers and lakes in developed economies are cleaner than they have been in decades, and that's true. A good example, of course, was the polluted Cuyahoga River which sometime I think in the 60s actually caught fire. Well, that has been cleaned up. The water a lot cleaner. You can actually eat the fish out of the Cuyahoga River. And that's possible because of fossil fuel technology and improvements. While current complaints about increasing quantities of plastic trash finding its way into our oceans ignores the fact that much of it can be traced back just to Asian and African rivers. To just 10 Asian and African rivers. In advanced economies, too, the forest cover has rebounded significantly over the past century. Cities where the infrastructure was dominated by coal burning, that's real coal burning, real horsepower, and poorly developed sewage infrastructure are incomparably better off today. London is far better off, so is New York or Chicago. And humanity's increased reliance on resources extracted from below the Earth's surface has helped preserve and promote life forms on the surface. At first, coal and later crude oil and natural gas-based synthetic products displaced many of the agricultural resources that were once cultivated, harvested, or burned, or hunted for industrial uses, such as whales, woolen or fur-skinned animals and plants. Increased availability of atmospheric carbon dioxide has also contributed positively to the efficiency of photosynthesis, hence to greater plant growth and to increased agricultural productivity. Far from being pollution, as our trust fund kid prime minister would say, carbon dioxide emitted from, gas-burning cars or coal plants or diesel, in fact, is good. Carbon dioxide is good for plants and for growth. Economist and chemist Colin Clark observed the benefits of population growth for pollution problems in his 1973 book, The Myth of Overpopulation. Quote, it is our handling, or rather mishandling, of sewage and industrial wastes which causes pollution. If population growth stopped, but present industrial practices continued, pollution would continue. The converse is also true. An increasing population with proper organization of waste treatment could be quite free from pollution. The same can be said of agricultural practices and soil erosion. For instance, slash and burn agriculture as opposed to modern no-tillage practices. Yes, slash and burn is extremely inefficient, but that was practiced by Stone Age people. We no longer practice that. Well, we haven't practiced it for hundreds of years. And a high standard of living allows people to attach increased value to environmental amenities, which in turn leads to more stringent environmental standards. The development of technologies to meet them and the regulatory machinery to actually enforce them, and thanks to fossil fuel-driven technological infrastructure, many people can live in greater prosperity than ever before. I mean, these are very interesting arguments. Certainly, carbon fuels created problems along the way, from urban smog to increased greenhouse gas emissions. But we shouldn't ignore that they've also powered innumerable solutions. An outright ban on or a drastic reduction of fossil fuels fuel use until successful energy infrastructure emerges to replace it will negatively affect both our environment and our very health. This is often not realized at all. Well, here is a very, I think, interesting interview that I did a week and a half ago, with two members of the Yellow Vest movement in Toronto. It lays out some of the issues about freedom of speech and in the conflict with around your war news, and I think you'll find it. I think you'll find it informative. At least I hope so. This was something it was a kind of an impromptu interview out in the hall just after I meet. But so often happens, these interviews can be quite good. And what I was trying to do is to explain to a new audience what's been happening. And this has been up on the internet and gotten quite a bit of attention. Of course, the enemies of freedom don't like it. Oh, yeah, one thing I should mention here just before I get to that. Ursula Haverbeck is 90 years old. She's the wife of a German revisionist. She has repeatedly questioned the so-called Holocaust, asking just for forensic evidence that there were murders. And she is being repeatedly fined. She is actually now in jail, a 90-year-old grandmother, a political prisoner in jail. Well, it's hard to keep a brave woman down, and she is a candidate from prison for Die Recht, the right political party in Germany, and she's contesting the for a seat in the European Parliament. I've got a story about that up on my Facebook. If you'd like more information, I can send it to you, and it's paul@paulfromm.com. paul@paulfromm.com. That's paul@paulfromm.com. And I'd be glad to send it to you. Well, here's the interview, basically focusing on the persecution of Dr. James Sears. I did this on the 27th of April. Facts versus feelings.
Now, I know that the left is going to crucify me for even talking to you, Mr. Fromm. Very, very infamous reputation among, politically correct circles, because you tell the hard truth. Now, we're here at a speaking engagement for Peter Sayers, one of the publisher and editors of Your Word News. A clear example of satire. There is no way when you look at that could you take it as official news. Great propaganda to those who watch CNN and other supposedly neutral news sources when it's completely slanted towards the left. Mr. Fromm, we got here late, and obviously Mr. Sayers had to split. What could you tell us about the event tonight?
Okay, well, Dr. Sayers spoke at the beginning, and this is all about freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And I come from a literary background. It's also about freedom of literature. You know, it kind of sinks deeper and deeper into cultural Marxism, and we become more and more pathetic. Here we are banning a satirical publication. People with long memories will remember publications like Mag Magazine and
that was exactly
National Enquirer, and eventually National Lampoon. It's satire. It's jokes. It's funny. It's not meant to be taken as a political manifesto. Anyway, what has happened is after a lot of agitation, took 3 years, various cultural Marxist groups, various Jewish groups, managed to get the to pressure the Ontario Attorney General, the previous one, the Muslim Mr. Nakby, under the lesbian premier, to charge Your Word News under the hate law, section 319 of the criminal code, for willfully promoting hatred against women and Jews. We had hoped for better from the Ford government. We and the Ontario Civil Liberties Association pressured the new Attorney General, Kathleen Mulrooney, to
Caroline Mulrooney.
Mulrooney, but basically the same policy. Anyway, we were to drop three outstanding hate, so-called hate charges. One would be against World War News. One was against Kevin J. Johnson, and one was against Pastor Bill Walker. They refused. All three are going to go ahead. So anyway, the Your War News charge was launched in November of 2017. It got to court in December, and a guilty verdict was brought down, which will be appealed, and sentencing was yesterday, Friday the 26th. Well, like so much in Canadian courts, it was a bit anticlimactic. The judge reserved on sentencing of the editor, Dr. James Sears, until May 31st. The publisher is a Métis or Aboriginal. He has to have a special sentencing hearing, which will take into account his Aboriginal background. Well, that's going to postpone things further. He will be sentenced sometime in June. Yesterday was very dramatic. The Crown wants a year. They want the maximum. So that's 6 months, which is the maximum, on the two counts being served consecutively. So that would add up to a year. A year in prison for writing, for doing satirical cartoons and jokes. I mean, that we have so deteriorated as a country. That's the sort of thing you'd expect in a banana republic. So that's what the Crown wanted. Mr. Sears' lawyer pointed out that the case law would suggest a conditional discharge, which means basically, yeah, you committed an offense, but goodbye. But James Sears had what he called an allocution, which would be an address to the judge, which is 62 pages long, which would have taken him a couple of hours to read. The judge wasn't going to hear that, but he allowed Sears to maybe summarize the key points. And what the main argument Dr. Sears made was this: Your War News, because it's fun and satirical, serves as a safety valve. And he had specific examples. He had a blind man who was brought into the court, and this blind man had been blinded by an incompetent ophthalmologist a few years ago who botched a surgery, and he already had one eye blind. Well, this blinded him in the second eye. The man was so distraught, and nobody would listen to him. He complained to the College of Physicians and Surgeons. They weren't interested. He complained to the media. Nobody wanted to hear his story. And he was planning to get acid and try to find that doctor and throw acid in his face to blind him. And when Dr. Sears did his story in Your War News, he finally had hope. Finally, there's somebody who listened to him. And that's basically what a lot of people want. They want to be listened to. And so now he, the blind man, hands out copies of Your War News with his article to passers-by. And Sears gave a number of other examples of people who are very angry because of something that's happened, and they're ignored. There's one Palestinian fellow whose cousin was badly crippled by an Israeli sniper. Nobody's interested. And he wanted to go and do some damage to a synagogue. And Sears convinced him, look, I'll tell you a story. And the fellow has now decided a peaceful protest is a far better way to go. So, and that's also happening with some people that are called incels, you know, that involuntarily celibate. They have nobody who listens to them. They're considered losers or not cases. Whereas Dr. Sears speaks up for them. Give some of a form. And see, that, as you know from the work you do with Yellow Vests and other movements, they increasingly want to marginalize us. The papers that they mention, you at all, you know, you're white supremacists, you're run by neo-Nazis, or the usual collection of lies. Mm-hmm. And they lie about us all. Mm-hmm. You know, when people meet me, that I don't live up to the image of somebody with horns and a tail. That's what they want. They know that people like Sears and Yellow Vests and other people would make a good impression if people were ever allowed to hear them. Instead of simply being demonized, they're
shut down.
And shut down. And I know that what's happening here with Your Word News, with the Yellow Vest movement, has really spooked the powers that be. When our worst dressed woman in the House of Commons, our Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland, her mummy shouldn't have let her out of the house, at least, tells the United Nations that the biggest security threats to the West are Islamophobia and white supremacy. We're the white supremacists. Islamophobia, it seems to me, it was those characters that massacred over 300 Christians in Colombo last Sunday. It wasn't white supremacists. The people who are concerned about radical Islam are on the right track. There is a problem there. But our political elite are absolutely terrified by the resistance they see building. I'm very impressed with the Yellow Vest movement. But Saturday after Saturday since November, in cities across Canada, they're out there, and politicians know that most of previous protests pretty much blow their load after one protest. Mm-hmm. One big protest, yeah, we saved the country, but people are now realizing this is going to be a long fight, and I think they're finally up against populist forces that really worry them, because they know their rotten immigration system that they've imposed upon us is built on lies. And once people begin to see that, this thing is going to fall apart, and they're worried. And I think that's why they're basically talking. You know, they say right-wing people are a conspiracy theorists. The conspiracy nonsense that's coming out of the government is a joke. But that kind of brings us back to your war news. Dr. Sears is absolutely unafraid of going to jail. He doesn't want to go to jail, but he says your war news or its work will continue. Whether it will be as the paper Your War News or something else, Sears is not going to go away. And they're worried about people like that. People are not afraid of the system.
People who don't roll over.
So we're going to hear a lot more from him, and I'm very proud to have stood with him. And we had a courtroom full of people yesterday, and we had a number of people who are East Indian who admire what he's doing. We have a reporter in from Japan. We have people from the United States. There is world attention on what's going on here and on what a pathetic mess our cultural Marxist elite made of things.
Can I ask you, cultural Marxism is showing up now. It's on the streets, the thought police,
the brown shirt colleges,
the group things.
Antifa, look at Pegida, come to the next Pegida,
Marxist.ca.
You can't think, unless you think the way the Marxists think, they're going to come after you. Would this be a bad or an incorrect statement? Or are we actually seeing this happening?
And obviously, I mean, studying, I'm a man of history, a real history, not revisionist, politically correct history. You see the signs, the thought police, the speech police, the demonization in order to justify what action they may take next against their political opposition.
And let's remember, much of corporate Canada and the U.S. are not our friends. The purges that have been inflicted on people like Faith Goldie, a group of nationalist group, people in Canada, on Facebook, and they've actually banned a whole ideology. They say we're banning white supremacists. Well, actually, banning white nationalism too. Well, they're all terrorism. But they're like two different things. White supremacy is wanting to push our ways in other countries. I mean, most of us just want our country for ourselves. That's white nationalism. And terrorism, that's a different thing altogether. So they ban a whole ideology. But you can be a communist on Facebook.
And make a very good living.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about people with white skin and that are nationalists. What would the majority of Hungarians be if they live in Hungary?
Well, they're odd ducks. They're actually Aryans or Indo-Europeans, but their language is not an Indo-European language.
But they are white-skinned.
They're white-skinned, yeah.
They are nationalists.
They're nationalists.
So, which would make them, according to the left,
Terrorists. Well, we could go all the way. What about Japan, right? Japan doesn't take in a lot of Middle Eastern and Third World, African refugees. That's cultural protectionism. Is that racist?
I had a very interesting conversation in Japan. Well, I've had a lot of interesting conversations, but I was pretending to be a North American cultural Marxist just to have some fun. I said, well, wouldn't Japan be a lot better if you had, say, 10 million Africans and maybe 10 million from the Middle East and 10 million from Latin America? And my hosts are looking at me. Has he hit the sake too hard? they want to be polite. They don't want to say you're crazy. Finally, one man answered me with a single sentence. He was trying to process what I told him. He said, but then we wouldn't be Japanese. I thought, bingo. That's exactly our answer too. With the sort of massive population replacement that's being imposed upon us.
Go ahead, we can edit.
It's not that we hate anybody, but if they keep doing this to us, or we become a minority, we won't be Canadian anymore. So that's the issue. Sometimes it takes some of the people who came up to support Dr. Sears were East Indians. One guy's a Sri Lankan. They understand they're trying to understand what freedom's about, and they're worried about the loss of freedom. Whereas all you read was the opposition. They say, the billboard news is racist, sexist, homophobic, blah, 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 blah.
Terror.
Many people don't see it that way.
Sorry, one more thing that I'd want to talk about. Not necessarily the demonization of conservative, right-leaning political opposition, but talking about the dangers of speech that may escalate into violence. That's what they're going on right now. So they have to police speech, just like guns may be used as a bad. Our words may radicalize somebody, and they might do like a Christchurch shooting.
Well, might is not a legal argument. Anything might happen.
Yes. But on the other side of the equation, Middle Easterners that are believing this left-wing propaganda are saying, wow, our brothers and sisters in North America are having this big problem with these evil white supremacists. Wouldn't that possibly amp up violence coming from other groups, not necessarily nationals?
It could. I think the thing is that there is a law already against advocating the breaking of the law. So if I walk out of here and say to a group of people, I hate those folks over there. Pick up whatever weapon you have at hand and go and beat their heads in. I've already broken the law. That's advocating the commission of a crime. Mm-hmm. If I say these people are a pain in the neck and here are the issues, that's not breaking the law. What they want to do is conflate any criticism as the next step is terrorism. Mm-hmm. In fact, as Dr. Sears was pointing out, if there's vigorous debate and discussion, there's much less likely to be violence. Mm-hmm. It's only when shut up your mouth. People say, well, what the heck, if I'm going to go to jail for opening my mouth, I may as well go to jail for...
Yeah.
Let's see, punch somebody out here. Be nice about it.
Well, and we see that being systematic. CBS, with their It's Okay to Punch a Nazi.
And that's inadvocacy. You're talking about the attacks on freedom of speech. I noticed that the number one... anti-free speech, anti-racist site, the anti-racist Canada, was boasting that they had gotten a GoFundMe program shut down for a woman who had apparently been fined $10,000. I mean, their ability to meddle in people's affairs. And I come back to the problem we've got with big businesses like Facebook and YouTube and PayPal and so on. We've got to let them know that when times change, they're going to be punished for attacking free speech. In fact, Donald Trump even suggested using the Anti-Combines Act against them. They should be treated like utilities. The electrical company can't say, well, you're a supporter of Pegida. We won't give you electricity. I mean, they've got to serve you. If you've got the money, they've got to serve you.
It's discrimination.
It's like Facebook. I mean, they make gazillions of dollars from the advertising. I mean, we're the people who are subscribers are their the people who provide the market for them to sell advertising. Mm-hmm. So they should not be allowed to discriminate. And we've got to get that idea out there that we're not going to forget. And that when times change, and they will change, there's going to be payback. These people are cowards, mm-hmm. and right now. They don't think we have much power, and perhaps we don't, not today, but we will, and payback's a bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, historically, with all this cultural Marxism, we keep hearing diversity, unity, all this crap, right? When has diversity ever worked?
It has. Diversity is the power of Babel. And you see, I was mentioning that to my Japanese friends.
How about the Roman times? Sorry to interrupt. The Roman times, wasn't diversity a great thing?
Well, they had diversity, and Rome gradually degenerated and collapsed. Mm-hmm. The original top peasant stock that built the Roman Empire gradually became more degenerate. There's a lot of mixing, the final inhabitants of Rome didn't really see themselves as Romans. What was there to fight for? And that's that. I've tried to explain diversity to other groups of people, and virtually nobody in the world buys it. They don't buy it in China. They don't buy it in Japan. They know it's a crock. And most people here know it's a crock. I mean, even in very diverse schools, you know, the white kids sit for the white kids, the blacks sit for the blacks, and so on.
Tribalism.
People want to be with their own people.
Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm offended because I consider myself a unique individual. Apparently, there's no one else on the planet like me. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been brainwashed to think that we're all the same. Do you want to comment on that?
We're gloriously not the same. We're not equal, and we're not the same. And that's the joy of being even with our own people. I mean, the Europeans are the most diverse people.
Yes.
We have redheads and brunettes and blondes and grays and you know, we have more diversity within the European people than any other people. We don't need to import people from the four corners of the earth and then tell them they can keep their culture and then try to build a country of this. It's not going to work.
Now, if we're all the same, a fish is the same as a tiger. So whatever a fish eats, a tiger should be able to survive on the same food.
Yes.
They should be able to communicate with each other. They should be able to live in the same ecosystem, the same habitat. And they should be the same because they're, what's the key word I'm looking for here? That
they're all the same.
Yeah, this is the lie that we're being sold, and our kids are being taught that.
Yeah, what's going on in the education system is a disgrace, a disaster, and that's why where possible, parents should consider homeschooling their children.
Oh yeah.
And I say that as a former educator, so I know the system. And it's so hard if you're a parent to keep on top of what your kids are learning and to constantly try to refute things. And you know, it varies from school to school, but I know of elementary schools in Toronto where there is just like wall-to-wall LGBTQ posters. So these kids, if they're at the impressionable age where they're just on the edge of puberty, are getting propaganda like, it doesn't matter who you love, your husband can be a he or a she.
Bombarded from such an early age.
And it's the perverted curriculum that was introduced by the lesbians government is appalling. Parents should be rioting that this crap is being forced on their kids.
I don't think the parents actually see it.
No, they don't know it was Ben Levin. Everybody's too busy. Convicted child pornographer that created it.
Yeah, that's a problem. Parents have never darkened their school's doors. Yeah. But I do know parents who do regularly visit the school and sneak out of the pictures.
Yeah.
And that's only in that area. But that's not even the area of history and that type of thing where a lot of our kids are being told that the white race is the cancer of history. All we ever did was, you know, mm-hmm. enslave the blacks and wreck the environment, rip off the native people and various other things.
Well, and I mean, in terms of winding people up, yeah, a person who maybe doesn't have a network, doesn't have a patriot group or another alternative media group that they can feel they belong to, you know, they're a part of, they end up becoming an isolated lone wolf with all of this anti-rape, anti-white, anti-male propaganda that seems from every direction, they're going to get wound up.
So, while that's the bad side, the good side is that there is so much good material, like what we're doing today, on the internet. I'm meeting a lot of younger people, I'd say that's 18 to 35, who are really tuned in. They know stuff. It's not because of education or their church or, in most cases, their family, certainly not the rotten media. They're self-taught because of what's on the internet. And they're great videos, all sorts of great videos. So I have a lot of hope for some of these young people who are living in a diverse society and know it's a lie. That, you know, that some of their parents are maybe have can live in a somewhat isolated area. They don't really have to deal with the invasion on a day-to-day basis very much, but the young people are right in the heart of the beast, and a lot of them know that they're being lied to.
Can I ask you, do you think the name Ontario Human Rights Tribunal is at all accurate of what they do?
No, they're a human wrongs tribunal, and they're you know, whenever you hear of a human rights tribunal, you're dealing with an organization that is essentially anti-white, and completely contrary to our interests. So the best thing we could do is abolish every single human rights commission in the country.
Or let's call spade a spade.
Let's just look at the UN human rights and how Saudi Arabia is.
Or how about the Marxist rights tribunal? Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
It's all Marxism. Anyway, we could probably talk for hours, Mr. Fromm, but thank you for the interview.
Thank you very much.
And I love the fact that you're keeping up with Yellow Vest activities. We look forward to many more speaking engagements we can take part in.
Yeah, and many more times where we can get together.
Oh, definitely. We'll be around for a bit. You can be.
That was the interview I did with the two fellows from the Yellow Vest movement. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side. I'm going to take my musical break right now and play a woman who, a great star from the 1980s. She's still around, of course. She's a singer, songwriter, a great pianist, Becky Hobbs. Beautiful blonde lady from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Here's a really cute song. I Don't Dance with Strangers. Becky Hobbs.
We got a good song to two-step to right now.
Oh, yeah.
What's your name?
Becky Hobbs, I don't dance with strangers. I think that's really cute. Here's a classic one of hers. It's Jones on the Jukebox. Of course, that's referring to the late Jones, George Jones, sometimes called the Possum. A really spirited song. She does a number of versions of that, including one where she's hits a mean piano.
In 1919, peoples began selling jewelry because we believed in love. A century later, we still celebrate love with our...
Becky Hobbs and Jones on the Jukebox. And here's a song by Lacey J. Dalton. I will hope you like it. This is Black Coffee. Hope you like black coffee or black tea.
That I would, you know that I would.
Lacey J. Dalton, Black Coffee. Have a interesting, dreamy sound, that song there. And this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Go ahead and play another one here. I hope you like by these country and western singers. And I just took for a moment. It's danced off my screen. These things happen.
So I thought we might as well just start with dessert. You guys remember that dish?
We've already heard that one, so why don't we play another one by Becky Hobbs?
Coming to the stage this fall, Cherokee, Nancy Ward,
Cherokee,
a beloved woman of the Cherokee.
Crescendo.
One of the playwrights is Cherokee Nation citizen Becky Hobbs, who is a Nancy Ward descendant and one of this year's inductees into the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame.
I think we're going to rock a little bit, y'all mind?
You know, I've written over 2,000 songs, and I've written way more songs than I will ever in this life have.
This is actually about
now on stage, Peterborough, a dynamic lady from Tulsa, singer-composer Becky Hobbs.
A little two-stepping song for y'all. I hope you've heard this before. This was a record out by me in the United States about 2 years ago. It's called Honky Tonk Saturday Night, and this is a Honky Tonk Sunday Night. Put on your cowboy hat and your faded boots and sign up in cowboy boots and this baby warm things I wanna learn and define. Sign up in cowboy boots if this fame you want.
That's Peggy Hobbs and Honky Tonk Saturday Night. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and wine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our